This week on Prepping 2.0.
The flower of valerian is such a lovely thing, and the smell is so beautiful. The roots smell like stinky socks, but a lot of girls are like that. They're pretty and they smell sweet on top and their socks are stinky, but we don't hold that against them.
When disaster strikes, will you be prepared? This is Prepping 2.0 with authors and prepping experts, Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Online at prepping2-0.com.
Get ready. Prepping 2.0 coming in 3, 2, One.
Welcome, everyone. This is Shelby Gallagher over here at Prepping 2.0, normally joined by my co-host on the show and co-host in life, Glenn Tate, but he is not with us today. Everything is well. Don't worry. Just too many things happening in life today. But hey, you're a prepper. We all plan for stuff. We're now looking at the springtime, and it's time to kind of plan our summer, spring, growing seasons, and possibly weeding, but hold off. Our guest today is going to inform us what weeds you might want to rethink before you go yanking them and getting rid of them. And right off the bat, though, I want to give a quick shout out to one of our great sponsors, Survival Garden Seeds. You can check them out at our website, prepping2-0.com. Click on Friends and Affiliates. You'll find them over there with a really great coupon code. And I want to direct you to take a quick look over at their Ultimate Medicinal Seed Collection. You can use our coupon code on that. You might want to think about getting some of the seeds we're going to talk about. Top 100 list of things that you should think about getting in a collapse. This came out of Bosnian survivors. Number 52 on the list, bug repellent. Again, hang on, listen to the show today. You might find a way to make a natural bug repellent. And if you've ever been in a situation where you really want a bug repellent because you're getting bit to death, it's a good thing to have. Have you ever thought about what it would be like to be a Patreon supporter? Aren't you just a little curious about what we're talking about and some of the funny things we do in our after show? Here's what you missed.
These are actual quotes we've said to each other, and you get to guess what the context is, although we tell you. So without the context, they sound pretty amazingly weird.
Glenn said this exact sentence. If I'm using a hairdryer, I'm praising Jesus. So Patreons get to hear all of that. They get to contribute, they get to help us out, and they get to be almost like our third guest on our show. If you're ever wondering how to become a Patreon supporter, check it out at our website, prepping2-0.com. So I'm excited to talk with our guest today. I was first introduced to our guest when one of our Patreon supporters gave me his book, The Homegrown Herbalist Guide to Medicinal Weeds, and I've never laughed so hard at a gardening book in my life. So I want to introduce to you the author of The Homegrown Herbalist Guide to Medicinal Weeds, Dr. Patrick Jones. He's a clinical herbalist, naturopath, and veterinarian. So welcome, Dr. Jones.
Hello, Shelby. It's great to be here with you.
Well, thank you so much. So, Dr. Jones, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to write books and do all the things that you do, and maybe tell us some of the things that you do.
So I've been a practicing veterinarian for over 30 years. Not sure how far over, but it's been a long time. And I learned very early that medicinal plants can be extraordinarily powerful for fixing things. And so I started using medicinal plants pretty seriously in the veterinary practice. And because it was a veterinary practice, it enabled me to do all kinds of things that most herbalists don't get to do. You know, I was doing gunshot wounds and rattlesnake bites and, you know, stuff that most herbalists aren't working with. And just found that the plants were terrific. I had a couple of little cupboards with medications in them and a whole room full of herbs, you know, just because there were so many things I could do with a plant that I couldn't do with pharmaceuticals. And, you know, certainly there's things I could do with pharmaceuticals or surgery or radiology that I couldn't do with a plant, you know. But the plants just were really, really powerful, diverse, almost no side effects, really effective. And so I started doing some lecturing, and I just got this sort of evangelical zeal about sharing this information with folks, because I realized that really a lot of the things we're going to the doctor for, we probably don't need to be tying up emergency rooms for those things. We can just go out in the backyard and pick a flower, pick a weed, and fix it ourselves. So I started lecturing. People started getting after me to write a book, and so I wrote a book. And then they started getting after me to start a school, and I told them that that was crazy. I didn't have time because I was a one-man veterinarian and lots of kids and lots of things going on in life. But they kept after me, and so I actually did, over many years, create the Homegrown Herbalist School of Botanical Medicine. And we now have about 7,000 students everywhere in the world, you know, everywhere but Antarctica. But it's all online. And the school is a lot different and deeper in some ways than some because of the veterinary laboratory I had for 30 years to do crazy things with plants that most herbalists don't do. Then I went to naturopath school, And, you know, so I had two practices. I had a veterinary practice and I had a naturopath practice for people. And anyway, that's just kind of what we've been up to for many years and been really enjoying it. I've written a couple of books. One's The Homegrown Herbalist and then the one you've got, The Homegrown Herbalist Guide to Medicinal Weeds. But yeah, we have fun with weeds and fun with plants.
Absolutely. I'm excited. Dr. Jones comes to us with a wealth of information and a wealth of experience and knowledge. And he's going to talk to us today about, especially this time of year in the spring, as we're all putting our seeds in the ground and getting ready to garden this summer, what are medicinal plants and herbs that we can, one, put in the ground and start growing now and turning into medicine as the summer growing season goes on? And I have my pen and paper right here, so I encourage our listeners to do the same. So he's just going to talk to us about this and maybe some of the weeds that we might not want to yank out of the ground just too soon if we get around to it. So yeah, Dr. Jones, tell us what we should think about first and why.
Okay, well, that's a great topic because, you know, one of the emphases that we have in my books and in the Homegrown Herbalist School are stuff you can do yourself, mm-hmm. you know. And we were growing on our place. I had about 150 medicinal species. We moved just a couple years ago, and I probably got that many here too now. But anyway, on about an acre and a half of useful dirt, I had 150 species of medicinal plants. You know, every flower, every shrub, every tree, every pretty thing, all the ornamentals were medicinal. And so we really were surrounded by medicine, and emphasizing things that anybody could grow or anybody could have access to is really a big priority for me with my teaching and writing. So how many do you want?
I mean, I know there's so many, and you just blew my mind. I'm not going to lie. I'm sitting here going, an acre and a half of 115 things that are ornamentals and medicinals. Holy buckets. Yeah. How do I ask you to, you know, pare that down into a few in like, you know, an hour? I'm not sure. So it's a big topic, but I guess for our listeners, think about this, like, kind of the sky's the limit. We're not just talking about rosemary and lemon balm here, kind of the common ones. You can grow a whole lot of things, and it doesn't necessarily mean your property has to look like, you know, it can be very pretty and ornamental, right? So I'm not sure where you want to start, doctor. Well, let's start with this. Easiest, like dummy proof, like, and easy to make into a medicine, and how do we make it into a medicine? Let's start with super easy.
So let's first of all talk about how you make something into a medicine. Because okay. That's the same for everybody. Okay. So there's basically three ways you can take herbs that are commonly used. One is, and the easiest one is you just poke them in your mouth. The plant's the medicine. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to turn them into anything. Very often, you know, and not everybody can do this, but I'm kind of a caveman. I can just take powdered herbs, you know, that I've dried and throw them in some water and down the hatch, you know, and not everybody can choke that down.
Some of them are pretty gross. I'm just going to say, I've had to do the plug my nose and, you know, close my eyes and dream. Yeah.
That's right. But you can put them in a smoothie, you know.
Yes, you can.
And that works. Or some applesauce. But, you know, the other thing people do is they make a tea. And when I make a tea, I just, if I'm using dry herbs, the medicinal dose for an adult for most dry herbs is going to be a teaspoon or two of the powder. If you're using fresh stuff, use twice as much, you know. So use 2 to 4 teaspoons. Boil some water. Take it off the heat. Put it in with the herbs, let it sit with a lid on it until it's cool enough to drink, and then you're set. Mm-hmm. The herb medicine, so I don't care how much water you want to drink. Most people do a cup of water, right? But you put a teaspoon of whatever herb you want in that cup of water. And then the other way is to make a tincture. And again, when I make tinctures, I almost always use dry plants. And the reason I do that is because water content of plants varies wildly. And some plants have enough water to dilute the alcohol that it's not preserved anymore. So it's just easier to do dry stuff.
Mm, good.
And when I dry stuff, there's any heat. I just put it on racks and fans and let it dry. You know, I'm not like heating it up. So that's how you can make the medicines. So I guess if I was going to have a no-brainer, got to have plant, it would probably be calendula. Calendula officinalis. They call it pot marigold. It's not related at all to the regular little ornamental marigolds. Same family, different species. Mm-hmm. Calendula is really great because it's so easy to grow. The seeds are a little bit particular about germination. You have to have the seed near dirt or it won't germinate. You know, so like the sidewalk crack is okay, but if you're actually on the sidewalk, it won't grow, you know.
There you go. Exactly. You make me feel so good because we've touched on medicinal growing in several of our shows this last year. And I've talked a lot about calendula. So I'm sitting here going, yes, I'm doing it right. Good. So
yeah,
keep going. Let's hear about what your thoughts are on calendula.
So the flower's the medicine. And it's a really great plant. It does a lot of important things. It's a really good antibiotic. So for bacterial infections internally, you know, stomach ulcers, enteritis, respiratory stuff, but also wounds. It's really good for cuts and wounds. I use it in my wound poultice. And if you want to see some really exotic, exciting work with wounds, go to the website, homegrownherbalist.net, and go to the blog. And I've got some wound cases we've done, you know, really horrific wounds that we've treated completely only with plants. And Kalindia was one of the rock stars. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So a good antibiotic. It's also a good anti-inflammatory, which is nice for wounds because it makes them hurt less. It's got some antiviral properties, especially against herpes viruses. So like cold sores is a herpes virus. Shingles and chickenpox, that's a herpes virus. Mm-hmm. And all the other herpes viruses too, but it inhibits those viruses so that now if you're getting a cold sore and you have some calendula tincture, just put that tincture on that cold sore when it first starts, and 9 times out of 10 it won't ever make.
Nice.
So it's, or shingles, same thing, you know, topically. Mm-hmm. And internally, it really helps. It's not safe to take if you're pregnant. Don't take it if you're nursing, but otherwise it's really broad safety margins. It's good for menstrual cramps. It's good for antibacterial, just lots of things. And the flower is the medicine, so it's so easy to harvest.
Oh, absolutely.
If I go to the scissors and not a shovel, you know.
Exactly. Exactly. I love it. And so the medicine's a flower. And so people want to dry it, store it, and keep it for, and if I recall right, doctor, and I'm just throwing it out there, you can drink it as a tea. You can use it as a poultice, as you just said. You can tincture it. You can eat it. It's an edible flower. I mean, you almost can't go wrong. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, no, yeah. I'm, one of the names, the common name for the plant is pot marigold. People used to put it in their soup, you know?
Exactly.
You know, you don't ever think about it, but a hot soup is the same as a hot tea. Mm-hmm. You know, you're all those constituents. So, you know, make when somebody's sick and they don't want to take herbs, just make them some nice soup and throw some calendula in it. They'll never know.
Exactly. Exactly. I love it. Here, kids, have some soup. Wink, wink. And yeah. Oh, I love it. It's awesome. All right. So I'm going to stop you right there because I want to give a shout out to some of our great sponsors that help us keep the lights on here at Prepping 2.0. You can find all of them over at prepping2-0.com. Over there, you're going to find Pro One Water Filters. Check off that box of getting your water preps in order. Come and Take It Armor, Katie Armor, Backwoods Home Magazine, New Mana Foods, specializes in bulk freeze-dried foods, EMP Shield. Protect your home, your car, anything electronic from lightning strikes, EMPs, and CMEs. Gibbs Arms, as well as Podcast Axis. They're the ones that make our show seem so, well, it does. It sounds super well produced because it is. So check them out if you've ever thought about putting together your own podcast. So back to Dr. Jones. Thank you so much, Dr. Jones, for letting us thank our sponsors. So are we done with calendula? I mean, here's what I know about calendula. You can walk into any garden center and find the seeds. It's not like this is some exotic, weird seed. You can easily find the seeds, and then they're easy to, if you get good ones, you can then sow the seeds and keep them propagating. Am I right on that?
Yeah, well, and calendula is an annual.
Right.
But you'll never have to replant it, ever. It self-seeds like crazy. Mm-hmm. Even if you took every seed head off, you could see or find, you'll have a bed full of calendula next year. You know, it's just a really, really good propagating. It's a little bit busy, and it's pretty sure you didn't mean to leave it in that bed. So the seeds will get stuck to your sneakers, and they've got little spikes in them to help you with that, you know, so that you can put it in other places in your lawn if you meant to have it. But
I love it. It's funny. The ones that are the best for you are, you know, God made it. I'm going to keep this plant around despite all your efforts to get rid of it, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. Oh, great plant. Great plant. Really good. Pretty. They're cute. You know, I mean, if you just want a pretty flower bed, put some calendula in it, you know?
Yeah. Good. Awesome.
And we could talk for 2 I mean, in the school, we have a lesson that's about 2 hours long just on calendula, you know? So it does all kinds of stuff, and we can use it for all kinds of things, but those are kind of the highlights.
Wow. Recently, I did a little video for some of our patrons and some of our, and I've talked about a lot, an elderberry and herb tinctures for the cold and flu season. And one of the things I put in there was dried calendula because of its anti-inflammatory, lung support. And I'm sure you would agree with me on this, that wink, wink, that big flu that we had a few years ago, having tinctures like that was really helpful. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of very happy success stories with that little pandemic situation we had using just plants.
That's so awesome. Yes. Yeah. And of course, we all have to go wink, wink, because we can't talk about certain things, because then, you know, People don't like it. People don't like it. But I'm just going to say, listeners, you know what we're talking about. Wink, wink, because you're with us on this. There you go. All right. So what do we have next on our list of super easy, dummy proof would be in the how to plant herbal, you know, medicine gardens for dummies. Yes.
Another super easy one would be anything in the mint family. They're all super easy. Like catnip, for example. Catnip is a really great plant. Very, very safe. The mint family sort of has a mission statement for the mint family. The mint family, they all got together one night and said, we're the mint family, and we want to kill somebody, and we want to do something nice for the nervous system. And they crocheted it and hung it up on their wall. That was their mission statement.
Nice.
All their neighbors moved. They were alarmed. But anyway.
That's awesome. I love it. And I'm sitting here going, did they really agree to, like, okay, keep going. I like your little analogy here. Let's go. Yeah.
So, and then they diverge a little bit. And so mints, you know, some of them are very antibacterial, like lavender, super antibacterial. Oregano, super antibacterial. Well, both of those are super anti-everything. You know, they're antiviral and antifungal. Some of them are just mostly antiviral, like lemon balm. You know, again, lemon balm, like calendula, lemon balm's very good for herpes viruses and cold sores and shingles and things. Lemon balm's also calming and sedating. It's a nice bedtime tea. Lemon balm is also, in some cases, very effective for anxiety and depression situations for some people, not everybody, but mm-hmm. for some people, it's a game changer, especially if you combine it with St. John's wort. Lemon balm and St. John's wort together for some people is a real game changer. And don't ever combine, we should say this here, but we should say it everywhere. Don't combine pharmaceuticals and herbs unless you really understand both, especially with anything to do with mental health. The herbs that are great for brain things and the drugs that are great for brain things don't play well together. So don't combine those without talking to somebody.
Good.
But if you're not taking anything, you know, then that's certainly something that could be done. But anyway, catnip, as far as antimicrobial properties, isn't very strong, but it's a very good sedative and a very good sedative, especially calming for the gut. And most of the mints have a strong affinity for the gut. So if you have, you know, belly aches or colic or, you know, diarrhea or indigestion, anything like that, the mint family in general is a great first grab to fix that. And catnip's a rock star. And even in infants, it's safe enough that you can use catnip in a little tiny nursing baby that's got a bellyache, you know, really good for baby colic. And it's mildly calming and sedating too. And so, you know, the little guy's belly quits hurting, he feels sleepy and has a nap. I mean, what else do you want, you know, in a colicky baby? And so
nice. Yeah. Think about all the times our children were like, oh my gosh. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. And I've been told by a lot of ladies that if they take catnip while they're nursing, that their babies are way less colicky. So a lot of those chemistries are getting through the milk too. And that's something to be aware of, is that sometimes if you're pregnant or nursing, again, make sure you're really careful and know what plants are doing what, because some plants that are perfectly safe for mom are not safe for the baby that's nursing.
Exactly.
You know, so be careful. And some plants, like calendula, that's safe for everybody, can cause a miscarriage. You know, and so just be careful if you're pregnant or nursing or taking pharmaceuticals. Those are just three red flags you need to stop and say, okay, wait a minute, better make sure I know what I'm up to.
Very good. Yeah.
I'll tell you a secret about the family, and that's that they are all megalomaniacs that want to take over the world. And there are some strategies for controlling and planting them so that they don't take over your whole garden. And most of the mints, not all of them, lemon balm's pretty well behaved, but like peppermint, some of them are really aggressive and they spread by root runners, you know?
Yes.
And so what I do with the naughty mints is I will either, I've done it two ways. I've taken sheet metal, like old, you know, roofing tin or junk sheet metal, and made a box and buried a little wall of sheet metal under the ground so they can't get through it. Or I've also taken like old broken kitty swimming pools, you know, plastic swimming pools, mm-hmm. and buried them and filled them with dirt and plant the mints in those, or an old water trough, you know, anything that's sort of a barrier, and you put some holes in the bottom of it so that water doesn't, you know, accumulate in it. But the metal or the plastic on the sides will keep those root runners from, you know, going and taking over the place.
Oh, absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have never grown a mint, I cannot stress enough, don't just stick that thing in the ground. Do not do it because it will take off. And then you go dig it up and like, you know, you take out your pickaxe and you go at it for a good afternoon and you're all sore and you think, I won. I got it. I got it all out. I'm never doing that again. And then 2 weeks later, it's all back. I'm not kidding. Yeah. Am I right on that, doctor?
No, absolutely. When you're out there with your pickaxe or your rototiller, they're all saying, thank you for doing the root division so that we can grow better.
Yep. Thank you. And it doesn't take much. It takes one little tendril of that root that you don't catch. And it says, all right, panic, let's make 10 more of us, right? Oh my gosh. Mint is crazy that way. And you just kind of hinted at me for this because there's all kinds of mints out there. And I'm always like, which one's the best one? And I think from what you're saying, it depends on what you want it for, right? Depends on if you want it for calming. It depends on if you want it for antimicrobial or sedative. So kind of check out your mints there. And I'll say, I'm just looking at the list from Survival Garden Seeds. I'm seeing peppermint. I'm seeing lemon mint. I'm seeing lemon balm. I'm seeing lavender. Many of these things are in that ultimate medicinal guide too as well. And they're in seed form. So you can be a little bit strategic in putting your seed where you want it to go and not where the mint wants to go. That's what's nice about buying things in seed forms is like you will grow in this pot and nowhere else. Am I right on that?
Well, once they're growing, they're going to do what they want. But seeds are a great way to start.
Exactly. At least you can know where the starting point is for sure. So we have, oh gosh, I'm just looking over here, doctor. We have can we start on another plant, maybe even family? We have a couple more minutes before we need to start our break.
You know, let me give you a shrub.
Okay.
A fantastic shrub to have is cramp bark. Cramp bark is Viburnum oculus, and cramp bark, the bark is the medicine, and when herbalists say bark, we always mean the inner bark, the cambium, but on cramp bark, the outer bark's the thin, I just don't care, I just take all of it, but you want that green inner bark, that's what you're after, but it's a really pretty shrub, they call it snowball bush, lots of people have them as ornamentals, they make these big white round, not big, but, you know, baseball-sized white round snowballs in the spring, really cute plant, and they're really of busy, happy guys. They grow a lot, and you have to prune them anyway to make them behave and not get too big. And so in the spring, before they flower, I go out and I prune my cramp bark bushes so they look pretty all year. And then take those stick into the house, and I peel the bark off, and that's my cramp bark. That's my medicine. And cramp bark is a really phenomenal antispasmodic. It's a muscle relaxant. And it's a little unusual because it's safe to take during pregnancy. A lot of antispasmodics and a lot of plants that are good, for example, for uterine cramps are not safe to take during pregnancy because a lot of them are using hormones to make the uterus happy, right?
Right.
But cramp bark, he doesn't know anything about girl hormones. He just makes muscles relax.
Oh, very good.
And so you can actually use cramp bark for threatened miscarriages. You know, if somebody's having trouble having preterm labor, cramp bark will shut that down.
Nice.
But it's not just for that. You think about muscle spasms. Muscle spasms cause all kinds of bad things. They cause, you know, coughs. So cramp bark's good for coughs. They cause, you know, muscle aches. You get a crimp in your back or a stiff neck. Those are muscle spasms. You can use cramp bark for that. You can use it for diarrhea because that's just muscle spasms, right?
Sure.
The reason we get diarrhea is because our little guts are working 100 miles an hour and they shouldn't be, and so no water is getting absorbed.
Doctor, we're going to take a quick break and hear more about snowball bushes on the other side of the break, because this sounds like something I've never grown and I would like to hear more about it. So don't go away, folks. We'll be right back.
More Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher is coming right up. Hear all our previous shows free online at prepping2-0.com.
Shelby Gallagher here. We found that you need to layer your food preps.
Yeah, this is Glenn Tate here. A lot of times the hardest part of layering is the long-term foods. We love Numana foods, which have a 25-year shelf life and are non-GMO. Also, organic meals are available.
Numana comes in family-style portions and in bulk. This is not backpacking food. It's family meals that last for at least 25 years. The perfect freeze-dried part of your food layering.
You can get a sample of Numana meals for $19.95 and see for yourself. You will be amazed.
Prepping 2.0 listeners get a 10% discount by entering the code PREP.
Go to numana.com or click the link on the Prepping 2.0 website.
Give it a try. Numana.com. That is Numana.com.
Without water, you're done in 3 days. Pro One Water Filters. It's literally a matter of life and wet. Pro One G2.0 all-in-one gravity systems are NSF ANSI 42 component certified.
Not everybody can say that.
No need for additional add-on filters to reduce fluoride. Pro One stainless gravity systems include a stainless steel spigot and a countertop stand for no additional cost. Pro One Water Filter Gravity Systems. Check them out at ProOneUSA.com. That's ProOne. USA.com. Most tested, most trusted.
Prepping 2.0 is about that next level of prepping. One of the key 2.0 items to have is bulletproof body armor plates. I used to think body armor was too tactical for a regular guy like me, but it isn't. Give yourself, your family, and your team an unfair advantage when bullets are flying. Body armor used to be expensive and hard to get. Not anymore. KD Armor, and that stands for Come and Take It. Make solid and affordable body armor for normal people. Get body armor while you can. The clowns in Congress are trying to prohibit future sales. KD Armor is the place to get it. CATIArmor.com. Prepping 2.0 listeners get a 10% discount when you use the coupon code GRANT.
When the grid goes down, darkness will descend fast. Used to be there was nothing you could do about an EMP, electromagnetic pulse, or CME, coronal mass ejection. Now you can protect your electronics, protect your family, thanks to EMP Shield. EMP Shield invented a simple-to-install device that prevents whatever's connected to it from frying in an EMP or CME, and it costs just a few $100. EMP Shield has been tested by independent laboratories and passed muster with the government, which has ordered lots of them. Google EMP Shield and see for yourself. And save some money. Get a $50 discount per device. Go to prepping2-0.com. Click on the Friends and Affiliates page, then click on the EMP Shield logo. At checkout, use coupon code prepping2.0. It's all one word.
Are you a prepper or homesteader looking to connect with like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own preparedness group? Already have a group? Well, look no further than PrepperNet. PrepperNet is dedicated to personal responsibility, individual freedoms, and being self-reliant. PrepperNet has monthly meetings in over 100 cities where you can meet and learn with like-minded people in your area. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Find us online at PrepperNet.com.
In a tactical situation, your AR is your life. Gibbs Arms makes a sweet feature, the only side charger that can use a standard bolt carrier group with no modification. Gibbs makes them in 9mm, 5.56, and 308. In fact, Gibbs Arms has been granted 8 patents for unique innovations. The company started back in 2008 when two Boeing engineers realized no one else made what they wanted. Take a look at their website and see all the ways Gibbs Arms can help you mod your AR. Gibbs with a Z, arms.com. That's GIBBZARMS.com.
Now, more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. Thanks for rejoining us. We're just getting started with our conversation about medicinal things, not just herbs, but shrubs and, you know, I don't know, vines and all kinds of things with Dr. Patrick Jones. But hang on just a minute. We're going to talk about just a couple of things. Be sure to stick around for the after show. We're going to talk about weeds you don't want to start killing just yet, but the archive died. Go to our website, listen to some of our previous shows, and remind yourselves of some of the great things we do over here and talk about it, Prepping 2.0. And I want to talk about episode 111. This was a really poignant show, and it was really interesting to listen to. We had a guest on, Leszek, I believe his name is. He grew up in communist Poland and moved here to the United States, and he gives us some really good insights that he is seeing the same things happen here in the United States that he saw in the communism that he worked so hard to escape from. Really amazing heart story. One of those that you're like, we need to remember some of our history so that we aren't bound to repeat it, for sure. So I encourage you to go check that out on our website. Just use the little search, the little magnifying glass in the upper right-hand corner, type in 111 and you'll see the episode right there. So I wanna get right back into all of the amazing properties that we were just talking to Dr. Jones about. We're talking about cramp bark, and I'm sitting here writing furiously, ladies and gentlemen, because this is so awesome. And I'm going to tell you this right now. There's several of the shrubs around my house that have reached, they're useless. They're pretty, but they're not medicinal. And I've always been very interested in making everything that I plant around my house useful. It's got to have something besides just look pretty. Although many of these absolutely do. I put in some berries and some some edibles, but to be able to put in a shrub that gives me some really great antispasmodic, muscle relaxing qualities. Oh my gosh. For those of us who have sore necks and have had sore backs and have had sore whatevers, this is really intriguing. So, okay, so I had to unceremoniously interrupt you, Dr. Jones, because we always have to jump over to breaks. But where did I cut you off at? I remember you were talking about that wonderful topic of diarrhea.
Yes, yes. Now that we've known each other long enough, we can talk about these sorts of things.
Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
But yeah, you know, we were talking about crab bark being an antispasmodic, a muscle relaxant, and all the different ways that muscle contracture and muscle cramping can give you grief in your life. And anywhere that that's happening, crab bark will fix it. And one of the ways that you don't think about it being cramping is diarrhea, but that really is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Or colic or other, sometimes other things involve the guts being mad in a muscle contracting way. But yeah, crab bark really can be helpful for diarrhea. I'll tell you a story. I used crab bark on people that are going to work with a physical therapist or a chiropractor.
Mm.
And you can use it topically or internally. This is a plant that will work inside or outside. So you can make a tincture and you can just spray it on topically. It'll also have that same muscle relaxing property. And you can take it internally or you can do both. But I've had occasions where I recommended this to a chiropractor or a physical therapist. And they always come back and say, I can't believe how much I could get done with this guy when everything was relaxed, you know?
Yeah.
And so just as a precursor, if you have a problem and you go to a chiropractor a lot or a physical therapist a lot, a dose of crab bark a half hour before you go can really relax all those muscles and tissues so that he can move things around the way he needs to, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Really, yeah. And they're cute.
Yes. I know it's novel. That's what I'm sitting here shocked for a moment, because again, I've done quite a bit of looking and researching that this is the first time I've heard this. So this is, you know what I'm going to be shopping for this spring to put in, you know, to put in and have. Because yeah, at my age, aches and pains. And I think about, I want to say, this is going to give away my age, maybe 2008, 2009, somewhere in there, I had a really nasty lower back injury where I felt like I could not hold my torso up because it was so painful and it was having those super sharp shooting down my leg pains. Yeah, I was prescribed a muscle relaxer. And once all that tightness went away, I was able to recover from it. And I've always kind of been super careful, you know, lift with your legs and not your back, you know, all those rules. But man, it'd be nice to not have to take a narcotic, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I've had a lot of clients in the naturopath practice that have had significant pain from, you know, a number of different things. And when you're looking at pain, there's basically, when I'm dealing with a pain situation, I attack it from three different angles usually. One is muscle relaxants like crab bark, like lobelia, like gumweed, you know, things like that that are relaxing. The other is anti-inflammatory herbs like willow or spirea. There's lots of herbs that are anti-inflammatory.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other with nervines, herbs that relax and calm the nerve and tell the nerve to quit screaming about the pain. And another great and easy plant that's a good nervine is valerian. That's a really pretty flower and they smell so beautiful. The flower of valerian is such a lovely thing and the smell is so beautiful. The roots smell like stinky socks. But, you know, a lot of girls are like that. They're pretty and they smell sweet on top and their socks are stinky, but we don't hold that against them.
No. Yes.
That's fair. But yeah, the root is the medicine on valerian, and it's a very powerful nervine, meaning that it's sedating and calming. And most people talk about valerian for, you know, insomnia, and it's great for that. I mean, if you take valerian a half hour before bedtime, you'll sleep better. But I use it mostly in my practice for pain, and I use it topically and I use it internally. And for a lot of things that other things won't fix, valerian will fix that pain. Because again, it's just calming the nerve. Mm. The other thing I use it for, which is another nervous system thing, is anxiety. It's really, really good for anxiety. It's really good for panic attacks, especially. I had an employee in the veterinary practice, and she would occasionally get a panic attack completely, you know, for no reason at all. It just was a biochemical thing that was happening in her brain. And all of a sudden, she's in a panic attack, and she would take a little valerian, and 5 minutes later, she's right as rain and ready to go back to work, you know? And so valerian's a great one, and it's beautiful. It's one that people drive by. They won't know you're growing medicine. They'll say, wow, that's the most beautiful thing. you know, so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Have a beautiful home, but that nobody knows that you're growing all kinds of, you know, you've got a little medicine cabinet happening. You've got a medicine dispensary going on over there. Awesome. So yeah. This brings up, as we talk about some of these, doctor, because you've talked about many of these are anti-anxiety, you know, when you're having maybe some sort of moment where you're having anxiety. And that's a big word that's used a lot today. And I think about how much is, and I don't know, by the way, everyone, Dr. Jones is not a medical doctor. Check all these things out with your medical doctor, you know, all those disclaimers. But I think about all of these young kids that are being prescribed some pretty heavy-duty Adderall, ADHD medicine, things like that. My heart says maybe try an herbal approach first before you start going to narcotics on some of these things. What are your thoughts on that? And again, this is not advice. This is an opinion to all of our listeners. Go ahead.
Yeah. I feel exactly the same way. I've had a lot of cases of folks that have, you know, those kinds of struggles, and we're very able to help them just with plant medicines. Some people can't, and some people, they really need to be on a pharmaceutical, and that's great. I'm glad they have that to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'd be dead 3 times if it wasn't for surgeons. You know, I really like doctors.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there's a lot of things we can do with plants, and the thing that's challenging is that a plant is a complete package. It's a very different medicine than a drug. You know, if you're taking penicillin or Prozac or whatever pharmaceutical you're taking, there's one chemical in there. And what happened in the old days is they used to take a plant and put it in a chemical analyzer, you know, and figure out, well, this plant has these 34 chemicals in it. This is the one we want. Right. And then they start making a pill of that chemical or something synthetic that's very like that chemical. And they're ignoring the other 33 chemicals that are in that plant. And those other 33 chemicals are doing things like improving absorption, improving digestion, minimizing side effects. You know, they're right. doing all these. God made a really fantastic delivery system with these plants to deliver medicines to us. And we think it's just one chemical doing the job. You know, it's this reductionist science. You know, mm-hmm. a scientist looks at a Porsche and thinks it's the tire that's the big deal, you know, but there's a lot of other stuff going on in there. And maybe we ought to take the whole package if we want to get somewhere.
Exactly. So I'm so glad you said that, because I just feel like you just said, Western medicine. Oh my gosh, there's more than once in my life. I'll tell you what, I'm so glad I had that muscle relaxer in 2008 where I couldn't move. So get it.
Absolutely.
But yeah. On the other hand, I think they can work hand in hand with each other. So if we do this right, we can reap the benefits from both parts of the whole, if you know what I mean. So if that makes sense. Yeah. So, well, awesome.
And I think it's really sad that we have the turf war, yes. You know, between modern and herbal medicine. That's just silly. Yeah. You know, they're both phenomenal tools. And if you use them together, and that's what I did in my veterinary practice for all those years, I used them both, you know. Yeah. In some cases, it was just herbs. Some cases, it was just drugs. But some of the cases, I was doing both. Most of the cases, I was just doing herbs.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
But in some cases, I was doing both. And again, you have to be exquisitely careful combining pharmaceuticals and herbs, because they don't always play well together. And you need right. to, you know, you understand both before you start going down that road. But for the people that aren't on pharmaceuticals, I think as a first step to trying to solve a problem, herbs are a great first step.
Very good. By the way, speaking, if we can jump back to valerian, another one of the seeds included in this amazing ultimate seed package from Survival Garden Seeds, which is exciting. So, all right. So we have about another 10 plus minutes, doctor. What else is the next one on your list of good things to grow?
I don't know. Should we do a vine? Let's do a vine.
Yeah, why not?
Hops is a fantastic plant. I love hops. And most people, if you read an herb book, it'll say hops is good for belly aches, and it's a mild antibiotic that's good for belly infections, enteritis, things like that. They'll say it's a little bit calming, which it is, insomnia, things like that. But the thing that I use it for mostly is pain. And I use it mostly topically for pain. And you don't really read or hear much about that. I kind of stumbled on that accidentally. But hops tincture, topically for pain, is astounding. It's in the same family, Cannabaceae, which is the same family as cannabis or marijuana, but it doesn't have any of the intoxicating THC issues that marijuana has. And it's not illegal. It's not controlled anywhere. I mean, they're putting it in beer as a ingredient. You know, mm-hmm. It's not, the government care less if you're using hops or growing hops. They can get pretty excited if you're growing its cousin in your yard in some states.
Mm-hmm.
But it binds with the same pain receptors that CBD oil binds with and that cannabis binds with without any of the legal complications. And so I love it for pain. I use it on all kinds of cases. And I just spray that tincture on topically, and 9 times out of 10, the pain's just gone. And it's a nerving, you know, so it's mm-hmm. that's how it's working, binding with receptors on the nerves that make you think something hurts really bad. But it's easy to grow. You have to have something for it to climb up, you know. But it's easy to grow. The hops, the strobile is the medicine. And what the heck's a strobile? That's the word a botanist invented to describe this thing. Nobody knew what it was. But it looks like a little green pine cone, sort of. That's the medicine. But the plant dies all the way back to the dirt and then regrows every year. And so what you do when it's time to harvest it, which is going to be late summer, almost early fall sometimes, what'll happen is it'll start getting yellowish powder on it, and it'll start smelling like hops instead of smelling like green weed stuff. I mean, that's hard to describe. But instead of smelling like green, you know, stuff that you would smell anywhere else in the garden, it starts having that sort of aromatic, rich hops aroma and getting the yellow powder. And so when that happens, cut the whole plant down to the dirt and pick the little strobiles off, the little green pine cone looking things, and dry them and use them however we're going to use them. I always tincture it because I'm using it mostly topically for pain, but really a great plant.
So here's what's really cool. So when Glenn Tate and I moved into our home here in Western Montana 2-3 years ago, I recommend people do this. When you move into your house, don't start digging stuff up. Let a grow season go by so you can see what previous owners of your house have put in. And somebody put in a hops plant. And I'm like, what? This thing? And you need that thing to have a vine, something to grab onto. Because if you've ever seen a hops farm, there's like vines that go up like 20, 25 feet in the air because they grow so fast. Well, whoever the previous owner of the house was put in this little tiny trellis that I'm taller than the trellis. So this poor little vine for the last 2 growing seasons has had nowhere to go. And it hasn't given me the strobiles because it's just trying to find something to grab onto. But what I think I'm going to do is put a string up it so that it can go up a tree that's nearby and just let that thing go. But yeah, it's exactly what the doctor is saying. That thing dies back to nothing. You think the thing is dead. It goes back all the way into the earth. Don't see it again. And then next year, here it comes. And that thing will grow. Oh my. They must grow, doctor, like 6 to 12 inches a day when it's the height of its growing season.
Yeah, yeah.
So
the way I grow it is I take, in Idaho, we call them hog panels, but it's those fence panels you can buy that are just like heavy wire panels.
Yep, exactly, yes.
What I do is I get 2 of those and zip tie the tops together or wire the tops together and then make an arch and plant hops on each side and it climbs up over that arch. And then they're not 30 feet high and you can't reach them, you know, but you get a lot of growth on that. But, you know, if you've got a phone pole or a tree or just a string, I mean, that's what the hops growers that are using it for beer are using it for. But it'll cling to anything and grow.
Yeah. And yeah, my poor little guy just can't grow. And so he just kind of sits there and like tries to grow along the ground. And he's too busy trying to find something to grow on that he's not giving any of the. And I think you described it perfectly. I think they look like, when I've seen them, not on my plant, but like online or whatever, they look like little tiny pine cones and they're cute little things. And yeah, what's interesting to me too, is I did not know that it was part of the cannabis family. Because I'll say this, and people have heard me talk about this. My son, who just graduated a year ago from high school and was doing football. And after every game, every hard game, and after every practice, that poor kid would come, you know, they come home and they're just beat to, you know, they get so beat up. There's so many deep muscle bruises, especially after a hard game where he's played hard for, you know, 60 plus minutes. And I would just CBD lotion him up just to make it so it takes that edge off that pain so he can sleep and recover. And I'd rather not do that. But now that I know that it's kind of the same thing with hops, I'd rather, no, you're saying use a tincture. Can someone make a salve out of that as well and get the same thing? Or would you think the tincture? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you bet.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I'm just taking notes here. Go ahead.
All right. So are we talking about weeds yet? When do you want to talk about weeds?
Yeah, let's talk about some weeds. And again, I keep talking about the awesome things over in this Ultimate Medicinal Seed Package from Survival Garden Seeds. Many of these weeds, you can buy seeds packets in, which I think is crazy. I would never buy a seed packet of stinging nettle, but what's nice is that you can decide where the stinging nettle grows. It's not going to decide for you. So yeah, and talk about, I mean, I just mentioned stinging nettle, but doctor, you tell me, what are good weeds that we shouldn't be pulling out of our ground as they start popping up?
Well, stinging nettle is a rock star plant, and you shouldn't pull it out because it'll hurt your fingers, but...
Exactly, for a couple of days, yeah. If you're going to do it with a leather glove, yes.
Wear some gloves. No, stinging nettle is an outrageously good plant. I use it all the time for all kinds of things. And once it's dry, it doesn't anymore.
Right.
You know, so put it on the rack, use your gloves, put it on the rack and let it dry. Once it's dry, throw it in your blender and powder it. And, you know, it'll last for a year or so as a powder or tincture, and it'll last forever, practically. It has some really important properties. It's a really, even as a nutritional thing, it's a rock star. It's got so many vitamins and really powerful antioxidants. I mean, a spoonful of stinging nettle in your powder in your morning smoothie is a no-brainer for nutrition. I mean, it's so good for you.
Yeah, I've read a couple of times it's considered a superfood, much like kale or spinach, because it has very much the same nutrients. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. And better than either of them,
yes,
in my opinion. But yeah, my wife is a midwife, and she's also a naturopath, but she, you know, when her moms were making cooking a baby for 9 months, she was having them take stinging nettle as a nutritive every day, and it was so good for them. Anyway, it's good for that. It also has some really good antihistamine properties, which people don't think about much, but it can be really good for allergies if you're taking it during allergy season. It's a good diuretic for bladder infections. So diuretics make you pee more, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So flush out the bladder, flush out the urinary tract. So it's very good for bladder infections. It can be useful for some people for lowering blood sugars. And again, you don't want to combine that if you're diabetic taking medicine to lower your blood sugar. You don't want to take a plant that'll lower your blood sugar a little, because now you don't have any blood sugar.
Right.
You know. But just a phenomenal plant, really great. The seed, which most people don't use, is one of the best things in the world for weak kidneys, or kidneys that are really struggling to have chronic kidney disease or chronic kidney issues. I've had some pretty dramatic cases in the vet practice of dogs that were starting to be in kidney failure, and we put them on nettle seed and turn things around sometimes.
Nice.
And the root is good for prostate enlargement, benign prostate enlargement. So, you know, depending on what part of the plant you're using, it can be very, very useful for all kinds of things.
Well, and I think what's really cool about stinging nettle, and the reason why I know more about it than most average plants, I have a field of it. I have probably about an eighth of an acre of it that grows naturally, and I'm not about to start whacking at it because I don't want to start making more of it. But every part of it, when it starts growing in the spring, take the young leaves and eat it like you would spinach. Like you can put it like you were saying, smoothie, but you can, like, if you're going to make an omelet instead of putting in spinach, put that in there. A quiche. I mean, it's very, very edible. It tastes very good. I've taken it just fresh and thrown it into a tea. Might want to add another flavor in there because it's kind of weedsy tasting. If you're looking for a pleasant taste, add something else to change it. We've taken it for allergies. The seeds, I can throw it out there, they're not that hard to harvest because the branch literally kind of spreads, like hangs itself out there, and the seeds just kind of drip there. So if you come along with a bucket and a pair of scissors, you can just kind of snip them off into the bucket. And you, if you stay away from the leaves, you'll stay away from the stinging nettles.
Yeah, that's exactly how. Pair of scissors in the bucket.
Yep. But yeah, and when we say stinging nettles, if you've never been stung by a stinging nettle, good on ya. I'm glad, but because they grow everywhere. But what happens is you just brush on the leaves, and I believe it's the underneath part of the leaves. They have these little hooks. You can't see them. They're these tiny little stingers. And you feel like you've got a little bit of an electrical electrode in your and the where it stung you, and it's going to be there for about a day, and it's just going to be an irritant. It's not like a bee sting. It's not going to be super crazy, but it's an irritant. And if you walk out into a stinging nettle field in shorts, sorry, that's going to sting your all of your bare skin for a long time. So it's not going to. Go ahead.
You'll know right away if you do that.
Yes, you will. And you will come right back out of that field. So yeah, just wear jeans, wear some boots, wear some gloves, long sleeves, and you can harvest these things without having to, you know, worry too much. So, all right, we have, gosh, my goodness, doctor. So we have like another minute and a half. What's one more quick weed? And we're going to take the weed discussion into the after show for our Patreon supporters. What's another quick one we can talk about?
Well, plantain, if you get stung by the stinging nettle, the plantain is probably growing nearby. It's Plantago major is the most common species, but you can chew that up and put it on that stinging nettle sting. It'll knock it right out. It'll do the same thing for bee stings. I use it in rattlesnake bites. Plantain's astoundingly good at pulling venoms and toxins out of the body. It's also very soothing. I use it in wound poultices. But I have a rattlesnake bite formula, and plantain is one of the major players in that formula. Really, really effective for keeping that poison from doing bad things to you. It's also another one you can put in your salad. It tastes good. It's good for pulling, if you have an infection, it has some very mild antibiotic properties. And I actually like it for like leaky gut because it has very, very mild antibiotic properties. And you would say, well, gee, why would you want something really mild? You know, well, it's because it's so mild that it sort of balances gut flora. It's harder on the bad guys and doesn't bother the good guys at all. And so for leaky gut, It accelerates healing a tiny little bit like comfrey does. Nowhere near like comfrey. It's a tiny bit antibiotic, and it has mucilage in it, which is a sort of soothing, slimy, wonderful stuff that guts love. Mm-hmm. So for leaky gut, plantain's a really good choice too.
Funny you should mention, guess what seeds are also in that medicinal pack? I can't say it enough. So if you want to, here's the thing about plantain that I like too, and we're going to wrap this up with this. Plantain, be careful, because in its younger form, to me, I have mistaken it for dandelion because it lays kind of flat to the ground. And in the younger form, they can, to me, sometimes dandelion and plantain can look a lot alike when they're younger. So keep an eye out on that. And luckily, I do have on its own plantain near my stinging nettle patch. So which is good to know. So folks, we're going to keep talking with Dr. Jones in the after show and talk about some more weeds that you don't want to necessarily get rid of just yet. And you might want to think about putting some of them in your home medicine cabinet. But as always, from our wonderful founding father, Benjamin Franklin, remember, failing to prepare is preparing to fail. Have a great week, everyone.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher. All the information you've heard today, including all our previous shows, is online at prepping2-0.com. Find out more about Glenn's books at 299days.com and Shelby's books at agreatstate.com. Learn about the latest book they authored together at foodpreps2-0.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.